Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
It's a week two edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. My co-host, Matt Harrison, ShockFantasy.com.
Hello.
And Brian Johnson, GuillotineLeagues.com.
Hey, guys.
Hi. If you went 0-1, you may feel inclined to panic. A little later on, we are going to do a rare diversion from three tough questions down to
10 tough questions.
10 tough questions.
Oh, no.
All centered around the appropriate level of panic for week one underproducers, and there were so many.
Oh.
This could have been 20 guys easily.
You know what this reminds me of? The old Fantasy Football Almost Daily Panic Room.
It's very much like the old Panic Room segment. We're going to break down all of the games fantasy style like we always do. We'll give you 9 players upon whom you can take a chance, and we will offer some premature speculation at the end of the show about guys that you will want to pick up. Let's roll right into our matchups, beginning with the Rams traveling to Indianapolis. Matthew Stafford and the Rams surgical in their dissection of the Bears last week. And frankly, the Colts defense didn't make it look like it's going to be much of an impediment either.
Yeah, the Colts defense, their secondary specifically, was missing Xavier Rhodes. He's been ruled out again, cornerback, top cornerback arguably for the Colts. So we'll start with the passing game. Just start with Stafford. Going to give him an A just because he looks so happy in L.A., doesn't he? Moving from Detroit.
Released from the prison of the Detroit Lions.
And speaking of the Lions, with the Lions last year, Stafford had 336 yards and 3 passing touchdowns against the Colts, who again are without Xavier Rhodes. And obviously Stafford has more dangerous weapons with the Rams, so I'm giving Stafford an A this week. Speaking of those weapons, we'll start with Cooper Kupp. Can give him a B. By now, everyone knows that Kupp and Stafford are breakfast buddies. Have you heard this? They eat breakfast together every day.
No, I was not aware of this. They're sharing Fruit Loops?
Something like that.
Okay.
The chemistry showed in week one. And in week one, Tyler Lockett shredded the Colts from the slot. So you got to like Kupp this week. Robert Woods, like him as well. I was going to give him a C just because he's not part of the breakfast club with Kupp and Stafford. But with Xavier Rhodes ruled out, I'm going to give Woods a B here. I'm benching Van Jefferson and DeSean Jackson. They might go off for a long play, but they're just dart throws and daily at this point. They're benchable in seasonal formats. And Tyler Higbee, going to give him a B as well. Former teammate Gerald Everett scored against the Colts last week, and Higbee was very involved against the Bears. Stafford looked his way as a lot. He gets a B.
Agree.
And so does Daryl Henderson. Daryl Discman Henderson. Farley superior.
He's no Walkman.
He's superior to the Walkman.
I like
he's one up from the Walkman.
Now I got to give some love to a fellow Brian J. Brian Jerkison, GuillotineLeagues.com writer.
Is it really Jerkison?
J U R C H I S I N.
Jerkison. Shannon.
Brian J. Another Brian J. We're the best. Brian's with eyes. He said this about Daryl Henderson. Indy's defense was league worst in tackling last week, which should pair nicely with Henderson rushing for 31 yards after contact against a vastly superior Bears defense. Indy was especially juicy up the middle, allowing 47 yards on only 6 attempts to Seattle, mirroring Henderson's week one up the middle success, 44 yards on 8 attempts. So
some good numbers.
Some good numbers.
I think we may have a Brian J. upgrade on our hands.
Oh, no, come on now. Don't do that yet. But probably in the future. I would hope so. I would love a few more weeks off, Brian Jerkison, if that is your real name. Over to the Colts, Jonathan Taylor. I'll give him a B here, even though right tackle Braden Smith has been ruled out for Indy. Taylor
and without their starting left tackle as well.
Eric Fisher could make his debut, but still very iffy. Taylor played in just 54% of the snaps last week. Still had 116 combo yards against the Seahawks. The Rams did surrender 158 combo yards to the Bears, and Chicago's O-line, still not nearly as good as Indy's. Even if the whole Colts line was out, they're probably still better than the Bears' offensive line. Not much more to talk about with the Colts' offense. I'll give Zach Pascal a C and Michael Pittman a bench grade. The Colts will have to try and throw in this game, and I'll go with Pascal. He scored twice last week. Jalen Ramsey should be on Pittman for the most part, so easy bench for Pittman. Jack Doyle and Mo Alie-Cox. This is kind of tough because on paper it seems like a good matchup. Chicago tight ends were targeted 9 times for 6 catches and 50-plus yards last week.
9 times.
I had a pause there, but I feel like I'm running long on this matchup, but thank you for catching the 9 times.
No problem.
I had no
caught me off guard, but yes.
Get the button bar. These two really kill each other's value, Doyle and Mo Alie-Cox, but it's Mo Alie's birthday on Sunday.
Oh, so he gets the edge here.
He gets the C, and Carson Wentz gets the bench.
Tough matchup, but I want to stress that Carson Wentz, to my eyes, looked shockingly good in the game last week. And also, my take a chance on me guy, Paris Campbell, had always played the slot and identified this weakness against the slot cornerback for Seattle, Ugo Amadi. And I'm like, this is a burnable opportunity. Well, this year, they've decided to kick Paris Campbell outside and let Zach Pascal play the slot, and he scored twice. So I want partial credit.
Mm.
I
was not exactly right.
Can I get both in one?
I guess you just did.
I just did. The Raiders take on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Matt. They'll be going without Josh Jacobs in this game. So what do you think about Kenyon Drake's possibilities as a probable workhorse back?
Yeah, I'm going to give him the Old Testament grade. That's a BC for those of you scoring at home.
Ah.
Right between there, the BC. See what I did there?
Yeah.
With Jacobs out, Peyton Barber probably factors into the offense this week too, probably 5 to 10 touches or so. And Devin Singletary looked okay. He had 11 carries for 72 yards against this vaunted Steelers defense last week. They have allowed over 70 rushing yards to each of the last 4 top running backs in the depth chart that they faced. So I like Kenyon Drake a little bit here.
So you're saying Barber is going to cut into Drake's production just a little bit?
Just a little bit.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Just a little bit. You know who's not going to get their production cut into? That's Darren Waller, who had 19 targets last week.
Jeez.
He gets the A grade, even against the Steelers, who, you know, only allowed 4 targets, 4 receptions, and 41 yards to Dawson Knox last week. Derek Carr gets a C. The Steelers came away with the second best pressure rate in the league last week against the nimble Josh Allen, who was pressured on 34% of his dropbacks.
That's a lot.
Carr put up good numbers in almost 70 minutes against the Ravens, but also had 22 incompletions. He gets the C grade only out of respect for Darren Waller.
All right.
All the rest of the receivers are on the bench. Zay Jones scored the touchdown. Brian Edwards led in yards with 81. Hunter Renfro led in targets and receptions. Henry Ruggs was the one that people drafted. And then Willie Snead was in there, and I was like, Willie Snead's still a thing?
And who knew? He had a critical drop by Willie Snead, too.
Well, and I was like, is Willie Snead on the Ravens? Because I remember Willie Snead was on the Ravens. Whatever. Rather large Benjamin Roethlisberger. He gets a low-end C grade. From the eye test, he did not look good. Neither did his line, who allowed the shortest time to throw, only 2.3 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats. And Lamar Jackson broke the streak of 7 straight quarterbacks throwing for multiple scores against the Raiders. So that's why Roethlisberger still gets the C. I think he can get to 2 touchdowns here. I think the target distribution of the wide receivers worked out about how we thought it would. Deontay got 10 targets. Juju got 8. Claypool got 5. Claypool's number was a little bit lower than I think that we saw down the stretch last year. I would expect him to settle in around the 8 range for most games.
Mm-hmm.
With each of these guys getting around 8 targets per game, they're all startable. But the nervousness surrounding Ben and the line makes me not really want to all that much. I'll give Deontay the B, since he appears to be the lead dog, with Juju and Chase just getting C grades. The matchups are middle of the road. Any guy could score. It's just Ben here that I'm worried about. And then finally, Najee Harris. I'm going to give him a B grade here. The workload was there. 16 rushing attempts, 3 targets. No other back had a touch.
Correct.
That's good.
Yep.
The production was dive bar bathroom levels of disgusting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And the Raiders allowed 149 total yards per game to the position last year, and just 122 last week to the Ravens' stable of backups.
Just 122.
Just
still 120. A lot.
That's a lot. Since Harris gets all of the running back touches, he should be fine here.
Buffalo takes on Miami, a bounce-back game coming for Josh Allen.
Obviously.
And, yeah, Allen has crushed the Dolphins in 4 straight games, and especially last year where he averaged 320 passing yards and 3.5 touchdowns per game. The Dolphins allowed Mac Jones, in his very first NFL start, to roll up 281 yards last week. And as you'll hear, I like the matchup for Josh Allen's receivers as well, including Stephon Diggs, who gets an A grade. Miami cornerbacks Xavien Howard and Byron Jones allowed a combined 86% catch rate in the opener. And Diggs smoked the Dolphins in his two matchups last year, averaging 115 yards per game with a touchdown in both of them. Diggs saw 13 targets in the opening game. And if he gets another 13 targets against this secondary, I love Diggs. A grade for him. Cole Beasley comes in with a C grade with a whopping 13 targets last week. Running from the slot, he faces the worst of the Miami cornerbacks, Nick Needham. If you recall, last year we had named him Nick Needless. Last year, Needless allowed a passer rating of 109 on throws in his coverage. He has allowed 12 touchdowns in his coverage between this year and last year. Emmanuel Sanders with a surprise C grade. He was on the field for 93% of Buffalo's snaps. He played all three receiver positions evenly, put up 52 yards last week, and this matchup is far more favorable, so I think he increases the 52 yards to a better number. That puts him on C grade. And because Sanders got all this work, and Beasley did, and Diggs did, I know Gabriel Davis scored a touchdown last week, but I don't see it coming here because he's just not on the field nearly enough. The only running back you need to worry about is Devin Singletary, who comes in with a B grade. With Zach Moss inactive, Singletary got 75% of the snaps and amassed 80 total yards against a very good Steelers defense. The Dolphins just got shredded by the Patriots runners through the air and the ground, and so I expect another good dual threat game from Singletary, who can catch some. His lack of scoring, though, always an issue for Singletary. His best season is a 4-touchdown season.
I did see that they are planning on having Zach Moss be active this weekend, though.
Yeah, and I'm not dropping Zach Moss. Actually, we're going to talk more about that later. We'll get back to that one. Let's go over to the Miami side, where I've got a handful of C grades that you can go with. We'll begin with the wide receiver position. Will Fuller's not going to play in this game. He's been ruled out for personal reasons. We won't speculate as to the nature of those. Let's talk about the other wide receivers. This is a problem. Will Fuller not playing hurts Devontae Parker, because Parker looked very good in week one, and part of it was because Will Fuller wasn't there. So I think he got a little extra action, and they threw to him deep a lot. But now against the Bills, as the go-to veteran downfield presence, I think he gets the shadow coverage from Tre'Davious White, who shadowed last week. I think he shadows Parker here as well. And Tre'Davious White is often a death sentence for opposing receivers. So I only have the C grade on Devontae Parker. C grade on Jalen Waddle. He was just one target behind Devontae Parker for the team lead, and he did score a touchdown for Miami last week. Now he runs from the slot. He's going to face Taron Johnson, who seeded just 43 scoreless yards last week, but could be susceptible to yards after catch. And Waddle brings 4.3 speed to the position. So yeah, I think there's a chance that Waddle breaks another one here, and I wouldn't be surprised if he scores a C grade on Jalen Waddle as well. Tua Tagovailoa is on the bench. It's very early. Sample size for this year is just one game. But he looked like the same guy I saw last year and was not terribly impressed with. I still am not seeing special arm traits from Tua. But I did like that he pressed the ball downfield more. The problem is, it's a good Bills secondary. They just stymied Ben Roethlisberger last week. They've allowed 0 or 1 touchdown pass in 9 of their last 12 games. And that includes a Week 17 matchup with Tua, in which he put together 361 yards, but he had to throw the ball 58 times to get to the 361 yards, and he's not going to throw the ball 58 times in this game.
And in Week 17 last year, the Bills had everything locked up.
I believe that may be correct as well. I don't really remember, to be honest. Let's talk about Myles Gaskin as we get away from the passing game here. For Myles Gaskin, the Bills running back defense looked much better than their league average unit from last year. They allowing only 49 total yards to the Steelers, and it was all Najee Harris, as you mentioned, Matt. Gaskin averaged 80 total yards per game with a single score against the Steelers last year. He was only on the field for 54% of the team snaps, though, and that really bothers me. Malcolm Brown and Salvon Ahmed combined for nearly as many touches as Gaskin had, and that's why he only gets the C grade despite being a workhorse here. And as for Matt Gesicki,
Mike,
Invisible last week, can't start them until we have some proof of life.
Invisibility would be a good trait for a receiver.
That would be a good trait.
After you catch the ball.
Yes, that would be extremely.
Not before.
Yeah, right.
Well, you can still see the football, though. Unless the invisibility transfers to the football.
Well, but your quarterback can't see
you.
If
we're talking like Harry Potter's invisibility cloak, I think you could get it under the cloak, and I think you're good to go.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. You'd get fined by the NFL for wearing a cloak on the field.
That's true, unless it's an NFL-branded cloak from Nike.
Probably. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. That would probably have a hoodie, like the kind you see on Bill Belichick.
I like this.
NFL-branded invisible hoodie. Invisibility hoodie. I like that concept. When we come back, take a chance on me. 9 players not normally in your starting lineup. We'll tell you who they are when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Take a chance on me. 9 players, not normally in your starting lineup. Many of these guys are available on the waiver wire. We'll unveil some sleepers beginning at the quarterback position and Matt Harrison.
So evidently when you're down by 30 every game, it has a little bit of an advantage to your YOLO style. And that's what Jared Goff was last week. He threw 57 times last week. Only Dak Prescott threw the ball more at 58. When you throw that many times in garbage mode, you can come up with 338 yards and 3 scores. And then he faces an angry Packers team that got blown out by the Saints and Jameis Winston. So either the Packers are going to show up, be really mean and hungry, and we're going to look at a ton of Jared Goff garbage time again, or they'll be what they were last week and give up 5 touchdowns to Jared Goff. I also expect Goff to attack Kevin King, who is one of 5 corners to allow a perfect passer rating in his coverage last week. Let's go Jared Goff.
Okay. Brian, your take a chance on me quarterback.
Of course I was tempted to go Andy Dalton in a revenge game against the Bengals.
But of course.
It's Andy Dalton. He's awful. So I was tempted to take what I would imagine is the first backup quarterback in TACOM history in Justin Fields.
But that was Fields outscored Aaron Rodgers last week.
You probably
and
will Andy outscore
Dalton.
Him this week.
Ryan, probably Andy Dalton too.
But I'm going to play it safe and just go with Teddy Bridgewater at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes, Teddy just lost his top receiver in Jerry Jeudy, but who cares? It's the Jaguars. Tyrod Taylor just put up top 12 fantasy points against Jacksonville, and Denver has better weapons than Houston, even without Jerry Jeudy. So Teddy Bridgewater, easy play.
Last week, I used Jimmy Garoppolo. He got us to 300 yards and a touchdown.
There you go.
This week, I'm going to use Jimmy Garoppolo. He doesn't have elite arm talent, and I think people hold that against him, but it doesn't matter when you've got awesome playmakers like Deebo Samuel, who leads the NFL in yards after catch, or George Kittle, who leads all tight ends in yards after catch. Just get the ball to those guys. We know Philly cornerbacks, Avante Maddox, Darius Slay, Steven Nelson are beatable because we've seen it many times over. I will take the 49ers receiving unit over those guys every day, and Jimmy Garoppolo will be the benefactor. Let's go to the running back position. Who is your take a chance on me runner, Matt?
I believe this guy was your premature speculation last week. It's Tony Jones Jr.
Yes, he was.
He just took over the Latavius Murray role. 11 carries for 50 yards last week, added in a catch too. Last year, Latavius averaged 11 touches per game. Last year, the Panthers gave up 5.2 yards per every running back touch. So needless to say, you can count on about 60 yards for Tony Jones. And that's a coin flips chance at a TD. And he could get a ton of mop-up duty in the second half as they're trying to keep some of the mileage off of Kamara. So kind of like Tony Jones Jr. here.
All right. I'm with you on that. Brian, who's your take a chance on me, runner?
I got Tony Pollard at the Chargers.
Ooh, Tony's. Are you going to go with a third Tony?
Now, last week.
Tony,
I like that. Well, it's got to be Tone at the end. The third Tony's got to be just a Tone. But in week one, the Cowboys were missing right guard Zach Martin, and Ezekiel Elliott basically was forced to play offensive lineman, and now the Cowboys are missing right tackle Lyle Collins against a vicious pass rush of the Chargers.
I don't like it.
We can see a lot more blocking than rushing from Zeke, and Pollard played the pass-catching role for Dallas last week, and Washington backs were targeted 7 times against the Chargers in week one. L.A. was also top 6 in targets and red zone targets yielded to running backs in 2020. We expect the Cowboys to be playing from behind in this one, so I like Pollard catching the ball out of the backfield. But he can run the ball, too, Tony can. And the Chargers allowed 4.6 yards per carry last week to Washington. Pollard owns a 4.8 yards per carry clip for his career, so Tony Pollard, he's at least going to outscore Ezekiel Elliott.
I like it. That's bold, and it's plausible the way that you just set that up. Well, apparently I'm tone deaf because I am not using a Tony.
We are on
fire. I am using A.J. Dillon as he goes up against the Lions.
But his first name is Anthony. No, not really.
It could be. We don't know that. I don't know his first name.
Let's find out.
Maybe it is. That would be awesome. An angry, humiliated Packer team is going to throttle the Lions, staking a big lead, and it's going to use its second running back during the second half.
Jameel William Dillon Jr.
It almost came together.
So you just took atonement for that.
Atonement.
Zingers today.
Detroit gave up, we think so. Detroit gave up 131 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns last week. And we saw 2 different running backs score touchdowns against the Lions. Dillon looked good in the small sample we got of him last week before he got yanked with the rest of the starters, averaging almost 5 yards per carry and 3 yards after contact. A.J. Dillon might take a chance on me runner. Matt, who is your take a chance on me receiver this week?
It's Donovan Peoples-Jones of the Cleveland Browns. Odell Beckham out again this week, still recovering from the ACL. DPJ moved all around the field last week, so he'll get a taste of mostly the 2 outside corners for the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, it's Terrence Mitchell, who allowed 95 yards, the 3rd highest total for a corner last week. On the other side, it's Vernon Hargraves III.
Man, is he bad.
And we make fun of him every week because he's not very good at his job. So it's not surprising that both outside receivers for the Jaguars scored a touchdown last week. I like DPJ this week.
I do, too, and I just want to chime in on this. Because he only had the 1 catch last week, and Anthony Schwartz was targeted more, and he's an exciting downfield player. But Donovan Peoples-Jones was on the field for 80% of the snaps.
Yep.
Only 4 snaps less than team leader Jarvis Landry. And at the end of the day, I want my receivers to be on the field. And so that's why I'm with you on DPJ. Brian, who is your take a chance on me receiver?
Speaking of 1 catch, 0 catches is less than 1 catch. And that's how many catches Russell Gage had of the Atlanta Falcons at Tampa Bay this week. Now, it's not too often I'll take the 3rd wide receiver on a team, such as the Falcons. But Atlanta should start this game in garbage time against the Bucs. Gage scored in both games against Tampa Bay last year with good yardage totals. So I'll take a shot on Russell Gage, wide receiver 3 for Atlanta.
All right. I am also attacking the Jacksonville secondary, much like you gave us Teddy Bridgewater a few minutes ago, Brian. KJ Hamler is set up nicely with Jerry Jeudy out. That's a lot of extra passes to go around in Denver. And Hamler's got a juicy matchup in the slot against cornerback Tyson Campbell, who allowed a completion rate of 100%, 8 passes, 8 completions, 80 yards, and a touchdown in his coverage last week. Hamler's always a boomer bust guy, and he dropped a touchdown last week. But I'm going boom here because you got to pick your spots with KJ Hamler, and they don't get any easier than this. KJ Hamler is our final take a chance on me player.
I don't know why I noticed this, but each of you guys have said juicy on this program already today.
Oh, we're very juicy over here. Speaking of this Denver matchup, this is a perfect segue, Brian. Let's go to the Broncos and the Jaguars. You already told us a lot about the passing game. You love Teddy. I love KJ Hamler. Are there other receivers you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, you got to give Cortland Sutton an A. You look at what Brandon Cooks did last week. You would think Sutton can repeat those numbers. And Tim Patrick, who's going to step in for Jerry Jeudy. I mean, Jacksonville allowed 13 catches, 200 yards, and a touchdown combined to Houston's receivers last week.
Houston's receivers.
Yeah, so Tim Patrick, he might be wide receiver 1 over Cortland Sutton. We're not fully convinced Sutton is all the way back, but I'll give Patrick the B. And Noah Fant gets a very safe B. Saw the 3rd most targets among tight ends last week. Could be in line for more looks with Jeudy on the shelf. Houston's Pharaoh Brown, who had 4 catches for 67 yards against the Jaguars, who also surrendered the 2nd most touchdowns to tight ends last year with 13. And lastly, for the Broncos, I'll give Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon, both a B. All three Texans running backs scored last week.
How about that?
Against Jacksonville. Gordon and Williams split snaps 50-50 right down the middle evenly, so they both couldn't produce.
Gordon in this had the 70-yard splash run. It is a juicy matchup.
Not too juicy for Jacksonville. No. I got James Robinson on the bench. Played at only 62% of the snaps last week. Limited to 5 carries against the awful Houston defense.
I know. Well, they fell behind by a billion points
really
early.
Quick.
But why will they not fall behind the Broncos even quicker, who just limited Saquon Barkley to 26 rushing yards and the entire Giants backfield to 46 combo yards that were also scoreless, the fewest total of any team last week. Denver also gets back Bradley Chubb, which makes that defense a whole lot better than it was last week. So
that's
I got
true.
Robinson on the bench. I do like the receivers, though, because you got to love garbage time when it comes to the passing game. I got a B for DJ Chark. 12 targets last week, but just 3 catches.
Wow, that's hard to do.
One was for a touchdown. The Giants wide receivers totaled a hearty 17 catches, 246 yards, and a touchdown against the Broncos last week. And that was in a garbage timey game script. Likely what we're looking at with the Jags here. And for that reason, I have very positive C's for Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault. Both were targeted 9 times last week. Jacksonville, again, should be playing from behind.
9 times.
Oh, man. 9 times. I got to pause.
You can just keep going.
You don't. You really don't.
Okay.
I want to stress this about Trevor Lawrence's game.
I'll give him a C real quick.
Right, thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
Unless you're heavily penalized for interceptions, because he had 3 very bad ones last week. There's probably enough garbage time for Trevor Lawrence to warrant a C grade in this game.
I think that may be the case. Overall, I think Trevor Lawrence looked quite good in that game. You know, first ever start, you're going to have some picks, but the box score, I think, is not a fair representation of how he looked. He has more special arm traits in one game of work than I saw all last season in Tua.
That was his first regular season loss of his football
life.
Career.
Correct. High school forward. And here's the other thing about Trevor Lawrence Bach. I saw 6 drops in that game by his receivers. DJ Chark talking to you. So I'm telling you, Trevor's going to be fine. I thought he played a good game, especially for the standards of a first start rookie. When we come back, we'll continue breaking down games fantasy style, including Jameis Winston, fresh off a 5-touchdown explosion in week 1. Can you expect the same against Carolina? We'll find out when we come back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Matt Harrison, and Brian Johnson with you. We continue to make fresh, new guillotine leagues with live drafts that happen pretty much every night. And basically, anytime there's not a football game actively going,
yeah,
we've got new drafts that we're making for guillotine leagues. If you want to try the hottest new format in fantasy sports, we've got guillotine leagues of all types and sizes, and you can even start up a fresh, new private league with your friends. We support leagues from 8... Well, normally 8 to 18, but now that it's week 2, 8 to 17 players.
All right.
GuillotineLeagues.com. Okay, let's jump into our matchups. As we mentioned, heading into the last break, Matt, Jameis Winston blowing us all away with 5 touchdowns. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Nobody did.
On only a handful of passes. Talk to me about his prospects to repeat anything close to that against Carolina.
Yeah, obviously the 5 touchdown passes was the big story, but here's some things I don't like. He only threw 20 passes.
Yep.
Taysom Hill came in and did throw a pass. He also had 2 rushing attempts. It's good that we only saw 3 meaningful Taysom Hill plays.
Yes.
But
they were still there, and they were red zone plays.
But they were there, and Jameis only threw 20 passes.
Yeah.
And Kevin King is not a member of the Panthers' defense, and this game sets up as a running game script for the Saints. So I got Jameis as a B grade in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the runners. Alvin Kamara, he gets an A. That's not much, but Tony Jones is my take a chance on me.
Yes.
Like I mentioned, 5.2 yards per touch for running backs against Carolina. Can we trust any receiver in this game? Adam Trautman led the team in targets with 6. Juwan Johnson was next with 3 targets and 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Harris and Marquez Callaway tied for the most wide receiver targets with 2.
Yeah.
The Panthers did allow 4 touchdowns to the tight end position in the last 7 games of 2020. So if I had to start one guy, it's Juwan Johnson. And I don't know if you saw his 2 touchdown grabs, but he went up and high-pointed both of those.
Yep, those were which is, by the way, the perfect way to throw him the ball.
Yeah, and one was in heavy coverage. So I like Juwan Johnson. I'll give him a C. I'm not giving anybody else on that receiving crew a starting grade, though. You can trust CMC, though. I'm still trusting him with an A grade, even against the Saints. In his last 2 meetings with the Saints, he's dinged them through the air for 7 catches and 72 yards and 9 catches for 69 yards and a score in just the pass game.
Wow. Well, let's hope he can keep that going because you can't run on the Saints.
The rushing stats are just gravy, though. Those are good enough numbers in the passing game to start him on that alone. Sam Darnold is on your bench, though. The Saints were able to breeze by the Bakhtiari-less Packers last week, pressuring Rodgers on 33% of his throws, while the Panthers' makeshift O-line only had to handle the Jets' makeshift defense. If a team can put Aaron Rodgers on his worst game in 4 years, I don't think I want to start Sam Darnold against that defense in the next week, unless the inactives come out. And there's some big question marks in the secondary here. Slot corner C.J. Gardner-Johnson, questionable with a knee injury. Marshawn Lattimore is a game-time decision with a hand injury. P.J. Williams is dealing with a back injury. And it looks like that's good for Robbie Anderson and D.J. Moore, who I'm going to give B grades to. It looks like when either of these guys go outside, they will match up against either third-round rookie Paulson Adebo.
Okay.
Or on the other side, if Lattimore or Williams can't go, they'll see Bradley Roby, who was just traded from the Texans last week. 4 of DJ Moore's 10 career touchdowns have come against the Saints, by the way, and he's averaging 5 catches for 100 yards in his last 4 meetings with New Orleans. Roby caught the 57-yard score and is always a big play threat, especially with the hobbled secondary. Terrace Marshall's like a dart throw D grade in this one, with Gardner Johnson's status in doubt. And there are no other Panthers receivers that we need to talk about at all, because the last one that we might talk about barely did anything.
He did more than Mike Gesicki, and we talked about him.
Yes. About how we're not starting him, Brian. I want to expand just for a second on this awesome Saints run defense and why I don't have an A grade on Christian McCaffrey. New Orleans has not allowed a 100-yard rusher since 2017.
But
which
I don't,
is staggering.
I don't care about the 100-yard rushing. It's Christian McCaffrey in the passing game. And the rushing stuff, like I said, it's gravy.
I'm quibbling with the A grade.
Okay,
I'm not saying
fine.
He's not startable. McCaffrey has never topped 64 rushing yards in his career against New Orleans. Sure, he will almost certainly catch a bunch of passes. I just don't think, you know, the A grades to me are when he's facing opponents, which he can do both.
I'm going to quibble with your grades later.
Quibble with my quibble?
Yeah, I'm going to quibble.
Don't touch my quibble.
Instead of instead of gravy, shouldn't the Russian stuff be dressing?
Russian dressing. You got it. Very good.
It.
Oh, God, Brian.
Man. God, it physically hurts. New England takes on the Jets, and let's start with the running game here with Damian Harris. His 23 rushing attempts were the most by a Patriot since 2018. How about that?
Nice.
They've got their workhorse back. The Jets just allowed 98 yards on almost 5 yards per carry to Christian McCaffrey, and Harris managed 5 yards per carry on double-digit volume in his lone game against the Jets last year. So it all rolls together for another solid workhorse game from Damian Harris. Yes, he's not going to help you much through the air, but with that much success on the ground, he gets a B grade.
I'm quibbling with that. It should be an A because you've almost locked down 100 yards for him and probably a touchdown, so that's a quibble.
Fine. Quibble away. I don't even care anymore. Let's talk about Mac Jones. You know, it wasn't flashy last week, but Mac Jones had an efficient, effective first NFL start, and I think he builds upon it here with an easier matchup against the Jets. Nelson Aguilar popped nicely in the first game. We'll talk more about him, and he's got a good chance at a repeat performance. And Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry combined for 8 catches on 8 targets. That was the most by a Patriots tight end since Rob Gronkowski left combined. So, and last year, by the way, the Jets gave up the most touchdowns to tight ends. And so I think Mac Jones has got a lot of opportunities here to have a pretty darn good game, and I've got a B grade on Mac Jones. I mentioned Nelson Aguilar in passing, also a B grade. The Jets are starting second-year cornerback Bryce Hall and rookie Brandon Echols on the outside, While they combined to yield just 35 scoreless yards last week, Aguilar has amassed a massive 25-pound advantage on Echols, and that, coupled with his inexperience, should lead Aguilar to a solid performance in this one.
You'd never associate size advantage and Nelson Aguilar with anyone.
That's
kind of scary.
It is a little scary. The other receiver is Jacoby Myers. They've got a C grade on him. Led the team with 9 targets, but turned it into only 44 yards through one game. Jacoby Myers is a bottom 10 wide receiver in average targeted air yards, and it's hard to put up fantasy points when you're catching the ball at the line of scrimmage. So we're just going to keep the C grade on Jacoby Myers. Let's talk about Jonnu Smith. We're going to watch his hip injury, but assuming he's okay, he is startable here. The Jets suffered the loss of starting linebacker Jamian Sherwood, leaving them to rely on Delshawn Phillips, who allowed a completion on all 3 targets that were sent his way, including a play of over 20 yards to an opposing tight end. If Smith gets ruled out of this game, then Hunter Henry vaults to a B grade. If not, Jonnu Smith gets the C grade. And the last guy I want to talk about is James White. Last week, the Jets allowed the Carolina backfield to catch all 11 of their targets. 11 for 11 for 93 yards. So I like James White here. Mac Jones seems to have some immediate chemistry with White. They connected on 6 of 7 targets last week. So put that together. I've got a C grade on James White as well.
No quibbles there.
All right, fine. Thank you. From the quibble desk. Let's go to the Jets side of this, where I've got only one player with a starting grade, and that is Corey Davis. He scored twice last week, but a much tougher matchup this week. He'll most often see cornerback J.C. Jackson. He's the Patriots' best cornerback with Stephon Gilmore out. Jackson has allowed just one score in his past 9 games. But for everybody else, I don't like it. Zach Wilson's on the bench, although he played gallantly last week, I thought.
It was scraps time.
It was scraps time. His offensive line, horrible. Guy was under duress all the time, constantly harried. He absorbed 6 sacks and a mind-bending 22 pass plays with pressure,
yikes,
according to Pro Football Focus. If that weren't enough, his receivers dropped 5 of his passes.
And he lost his left tackle.
Yeah, great point. Patriots attack with Matthew Judon and Christian Barrymore and Kyle Van Noy. It's a total mismatch here. I don't like Zach Wilson in this one. I don't like any of the rest of the receivers, particularly now that Jamison Crowder's back. He just muddies up the water and thins out the scoring opportunities for everybody else. And then the mismatch of lousy runners for the Jets, Coleman and Johnson and Carter. Patriots are a good run defense. They shut down the Miami runners last week, holding them to 4 yards per carry. None of them scored, and these guys are splitting time. We're just going to leave them all on the bench.
Yep.
Cincinnati takes on Chicago. Cincinnati coming off a very good game against the rebuilt Vikings defense. And the Chicago secondary looks worse. I like a lot of Cincinnati players in this game, Brian.
Yeah, me as well. I'm going to start with the running back, Joe Mixon, giving him an A. 33 touches last week for Mixon, the only running back to top 30 across the league. Mixon nearly doubled the touch total of the Rams' Daryl Henderson, who had 89 combo yards and a touchdown and just 18 touches against the Bears. So give Mixon that 25-plus, and we're looking at a monster stat line for Joe. Over to the wide receivers, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, both get Bs from me. Both scored last week. Jamar Chase scored from 50-plus yards. The Bears allowed 2 wide receiver touchdowns of 50-plus yards to the Rams last week. 3 wide receiver touchdowns in all. And for that reason, I give Tyler Boyd a very strong B, too. He was quiet in week 1, but look for Burrow to get him involved against the Bears' shoddy secondary. Chicago slot corner Marquis Christian looked absolutely lost.
He did.
Last week.
Brutal. What Cooper Kupp did to him is against the laws of nature.
Now, wait for it. Tyler Boyd is going to give Marquis the biz on Sunday.
Oh, I got it.
There we go.
Yep.
And for all those reasons, Joe Burrow gets a B, too. Just because I'm worried Joe Mixon might go off on the ground. Like the trio of receivers for Cincy, of course. Matt Stafford was airing it out against Chicago last week. He averaged 12-plus yards per attempt. That was the second highest clip in the league in week 1. So a B for Joe Burrow.
Hey, who does Joe Burrow eat breakfast with, though?
All 3.
Okay,
all 3
good.
This week, I would think. I would invite all my wide receivers to breakfast.
Obviously.
I think it's weird to like get up and call your friends to come to your house for breakfast.
I think they go into the facility and have breakfast
maybe
there.
That'd be my guess. It's free there. As much money as they make, the NFL players
really,
want their free food.
I think they can afford cereal.
But they still want the free food, trust me. Now, I love me a revenge game, and there's no better revenge opportunity for Andy Dalton against the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still on the bench for me. If he does not come – by the way, Dalton did not – the Bears as a team, because Justin Fields did play a little bit. We're not going to fault him for this. The Bears did not attempt a single pass longer than 15 yards against the Rams last week. I don't even know how that's
Can Andy Dalton throw longer than
I'm not convinced
yards?
He can anymore, so he's on the bench for that reason. This should be the end of his very short era as the starting quarterback in Chicago. Hopefully we see Justin Fields at some point. A couple starting grades, though, for some Bears receivers. Allen Robinson, no chance he doesn't see 10-plus targets in this game. Minnesota Great. Wideouts were targeted 29 times against the Bengals. Granted, that was like five quarters of play. Basically went all of overtime. But still, you're not benching Allen Robinson. Don't do that. I will bench Darnell Mooney, though. Just can't trust Andy Dalton, man. You just can't do it. Cole Kmet, though, I'll give him a C in the tight end wasteland. A decent five catches, 42 yards on seven targets last
week. Yeah, surprisingly active.
Jimmy Graham did steal two targets, one in the red zone. Absolutely gross. You hate to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Conklin had four catches for 41 yards last week against the Bengals, so feasible for Kmet to get to double-digit PPR points. And lastly, David Montgomery, going to give him a B. Looked good against the Rams.
I thought he looked great the Rams. I think, and it's weird, running backs almost never get better in like year three, year four. I thought Montgomery just had his best game.
I was about to say he looks like he's getting better in literally every game he's playing.
It's almost weird.
It is concerning that Damien Williams did steal 10 touches, out targeted Montgomery 5-1. But Monty is still one of the safer plays when it comes to volume, so a B for him.
And we warned you about the Williams situation and previous shows. We expected that to come up. Matt, let's go over to Houston taking on Cleveland. Tyrod Taylor, they had a big game, but it was against Jacksonville. What do you expect from this Houston offense in this one?
Not much. I got Tyrod Taylor on the bench. Last week's game against the Jags was his absolute ceiling.
Yes.
291-2. Seven of the last 10 quarterbacks to face the Browns have been held under 240 yards. The only receiver of his that you can even fathom starting is Brandon Cooks, who gets a C grade. Five catches for 132 is not terrible from last week. He's going to keep getting looks. This week he matches up mostly with Greg Newsom, who only allowed one catch for 4 yards in his coverage last week against Kansas City, but I think he was covering
He did not have Tyreek Hill, clearly.
Yeah, Danny Amendola looks locked in as the second guy, but no thanks there. And you don't want to start any of the runners. You don't want to play these reindeer games with the Texans running backs, Mark Ingram, David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, all on the bench. The Browns are really good against the run. Only one back has topped 60 rushing yards against them since week 9 of last year, and the Chiefs' backs only managed 49 rushing yards last week. Let's go over to the Cleveland side where I'm going to play this sound. Because Nick Chubb is this week's fantasy aardvark.
Oh, I like it.
So Pro Football Focus does this thing where they rate the offensive line versus the defensive line in a matchup, both for the run and the pass. Now, normally anything with like a 30%-ish advantage is good for the offense. The run advantage for the Browns this weekend is 138%.
I have a perfect 10 out of 10 grade on Nick Chubb this week.
Only the Jaguars could make the Texans look human, and that's because they completely abandoned the run. Kareem Hunt gets a B grade in this game, too. It's almost an A grade for Kareem Hunt. Jarvis Landry, he's getting an A grade as well. Since Odell went down in week 7 last year, Landry has put up some decently solid numbers, averaging 8 targets, 5.5 catches, 60 yards, and half a score per game. He's a dependable C grade in tough matchups, but when you get Desmond King, who allowed 7 receptions on 8 targets in his coverage last week, that's great. Donovan Peoples-Jones was my take-a-chance-on-me wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not starting any Cleveland tight end, as Hooper had 3 targets, Njoku had 5, and Harrison Bryant had 2.
Yeah.
And then finally, Baker Mayfield gets a B. I believe the Browns will win by more than a touchdown if you do too. Baker's in a good spot. In the last 2 years in games where the Browns have won by 8 points or more, Baker's average line was 250 yards and 1.8 touchdowns. And in those 10 wins, he's topped 300 yards a few times, 3 touchdowns. There it is, Baker B.
When we come back, we normally play 3 tough questions. This week, a special edition with 10 tough questions.
Oh,
can
gosh.
You go 10-0? Find out when Fantasy Football Weekly continues. It's hour number 2, Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. You can follow me on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. You have to figure out how to spell Charchian, and that's part of the trick. That's how we filter out my followers. If you can't figure out Charchian, then apparently you're not worthy of following me. If you want to follow Matt Harrison, at Explosive Output, and Brian Johnson, my third co-host today, at BTXJ.
You can figure out how to spell that one, I bet.
I'm still waiting for some kind of corporation to need that ticker
symbol.
And then come
calling.
Yeah.
Won't that be nice? Yeah, you've got there's probably no iterations of 4 letters
that are
left on Twitter. Normally, we play a game called 3 Tough Questions right now, where I pepper my co-hosts with 3 questions. But this week, we are playing a variant speed version, a lightning version.
Ooh, lightning round.
It's like a lightning round of tough questions. For every one of these, I want you to tell me the appropriate level of concern for the player. Is it none? Is it some? Or is it a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? Also known as, abbreviated, that would be blowed. So you can go none, some, or blowed. B-L-L-O-E-D.
I was going to go with bled. I was going to leave the O-L, but I like bloat way
better. Bloat is way better. Yeah, absolutely.
I can work with that.
Our first player. What is the appropriate level of concern for Trey Sermon, Matt?
Some concern. I'm worried that Shanahan is getting Belichick levels of grudginess here, although losing Raheem Mostert for the season makes it much more likely that this will turn around quickly. There's a couple of backs who were active ahead of him last week. That's concerning.
Yes, it is. Okay, Brian? Appropriate level of concern for Trey Sermon.
A bloat level of concern for me, because most people drafted Trey Sermon to be the RB1, and that's counting in redraft leagues. And he didn't even see the field in week 1. He was inactive.
He certainly bloated last week.
And we all know, Raheem Mostert out of the equation now for San Francisco. But he's an unproven workhorse. He's a rookie out of college, and he's in a 3-man platoon of hell full of Shanahanigans. So a bloat level of concern for Trey Sermon.
The correct answer is some level. I think he's just a lukewarm talent, but for all we know, he starts like the next 16 games. I mean, I think it's too early to get a read on it. Is it eyebrow raising that he was 4th on the depth chart coming into the season? Yes, it was, but we've seen stranger things happen in a Shanahan backfield before.
Tough question
number 2. Appropriate level of concern for Ronald Jones, Brian.
We are bloated again because, again, he was drafted as the supposed RB1 for Tampa Bay. We'll talk about this matchup a little more. I guess he is going into week 2, but again, you never know what Bruce Arians is going to do. Leo Fournette still in tow. And Gio Bernard is the pass-catching back. So Jones was basically never going to catch a pass. But Bernard had chances to be the bell cow in Cincinnati, and he wasn't awful then. He could steal early down work, so bloat level for Jones.
All right. Matt, what's the appropriate level of concern for Ronald Jones?
In a non-best ball format, it's poop your pants time. We covered it last season. You don't know when to start Rojo, Leo, or Gio. It's even more messy now.
The appropriate level of concern for Ronald Jones is bloat, bowel loosening levels of existential dread, and it always should have been this from the beginning, and it's the stuff we've told you about so many times. You just can't ever trust Bruce Arians. He says Jones will start this next game, but keep in mind Bruce Arians is a liar.
That just means he'll be on the field for the
first snap, and then he'll fumble, and it won't matter.
Yep.
Tough question.
Number 3. Appropriate level of concern for Saquon Barkley, Matt.
After seeing that big 40-something yard run on Thursday night, it's a little less, but it's still some. He's definitely not ready for a full workload, as evidenced by 11 touches and 15 touches in his first 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just some, but I think he's working his way back there.
All right. Appropriate level of concern for Saquon Barkley. Brian.
Yeah, Matt mentioned the good run, but then the rest of them are like 2-3 yards, and there's really nothing he can do about that behind that awful, awful offensive line. The quarterback, not much better. I'm not blowed on Barkley, but there is definitely some level of concern. But his usage should ramp up every
yes.
week.
You guys hit all my talking points here. He gets 10 days off beginning right now. This is day one of 10, and that will help him. And I think next time we see that offense, Barkley is getting the majority of the work. Some correct is the correct answer.
Tough question.
Number four, what's the appropriate level of concern for Ben Roethlisberger? Brian.
It was a somewhat tough matchup with Buffalo, but he looked absolutely washed throwing the football. No mobility left for Big Ben. That offensive line is shaky. He's just going to get killed back there. Blowed.
Okay, Matt, appropriate level of concern for Big Ben.
We saw this with Peyton Manning. We saw this with Drew Brees. Their arms get to be toast at some point. The only saving grace for Ben is the schedule isn't terrible for him, but still, even a two-quarterback league, I don't want him. It's blowed.
It is blowed. You guys hit most of my talking points, and you mentioned a key one earlier. Offensive line so bad. Ben had the league's lowest time to throw, just 2.3 seconds in the pocket last week. He was the bottom-ranked quarterback in time to throw last year as well. Next.
Tough question.
Number five. Appropriate level of concern for Julio Jones, Matt?
He doesn't score touchdowns, and I've been saying that for about 5 years now. That's why I don't have him on any of my teams. At this stage in his career, he's probably lost a step or two as well, but it's still just only some concern, and I want to see how he does this week because I really like the matchup against Tennessee.
Okay. Brian, appropriate level of concern for Julio Jones.
We knew he'd play second fiddle to A.J. Brown in Tennessee, and now the sample size is just 1 week. It's pretty small, but he's already playing now third fiddle behind A.J. Brown and Chester Rogers, but I'm not giving up on Julio just yet. Not like you should drop him or anything, but definitely some level of concern.
No level of concern is the correct answer, aside from the ongoing injury concern they always have had with him. There's like no new level of concern anyway. The Titans' offensive line looked bad, and that does worry me. It can't be any worse than it was last week. And the Titans, just the fact they only have two real targets, Jones and Brown, tells me volume and opportunity will ultimately be there and he will improve.
Tough question.
Number six is appropriate level of concern for Brandon Ayuk. Brian.
Well, he had this hamstring thing going into week one. So everyone knows no targets, no catches for Ayuk in week one. And maybe, the hamstring was the thing, but he was returning punts. He was the starting punt returner. You don't do that with a guy with a gimpy
hamstring.
Hamstring
was not the problem.
Now, he still ran the third most pass routes on the team behind Debo Samuel and George Kittle. He'll still be top three. I think he gets healthier as the season goes on. So just some level of concern, but not none. Some.
Okay. Appropriate level of concern for Brandon Ayuk.
His coach, Grudgy Grudgerton, had him running with the third team wide receivers this week. It was Debo and Sherfield with the first, Sanu and Jawan Jennings with the second, and Ayuk alone as the fifth wide receiver on the depth chart. I think it's full-blown panic time on Brandon Ayuk. Shanahan's calling him out here.
The correct answer is the bowel loosening levels of existential dread blowed. 2 years ago, we saw Kyle Shanahan dispose of another high draft pick wide receiver, Dante Pettis, and never look back. Ayuk has got to work his way back all the way from the bottom of the depth chart. I'm not sure that it happens here and how long it might take to happen. So, but let's say it does. Does it take 6 games, 8 games? Am I supposed to burn a roster spot that whole time? Very worried about Brandon Ayuk.
Tough question.
Number seven. Mike Evans, what's the appropriate level of concern, Matt?
None. He had 6 targets last week, and 6 targets is okay for a down week.
All right, Brian.
Some for me, for sure. He looks like the third option at wide receiver right now, and he could be the fourth passing option behind Gronk, who looked great in week one. So some level of concern for me for Mike Evans.
No level of concern because he does this. He has disappearing games. You knew that when you drafted him, and you need to accept that. Nothing has changed, and he'll have other very good games as well. This is a high-functioning passing offense, of which he's still an important part.
Tough question.
Number eight, Najee Harris. What's the appropriate level of concern, Brian?
We mentioned we don't like the quarterback or the offensive line in Pittsburgh. That never really helps the running back. But Najee is young. He was on the field for 100% of the snaps. The volume will be there, but he's going to have to work for it pretty hard. So some level of concern for me.
Matt, appropriate level of concern for Najee Harris?
Ditto what Brian said. So.
And I had all the same talking points.
Tough question.
Number 9. What's the appropriate level of concern for Zach Moss, Matt?
Pants pooping panic. He can't beat out Singletary for touches. He might just be a super ordinary runner.
Ouch. Brian, what's the appropriate level of concern for Zach Moss?
Like you, Charge, I'm a Zach Moss Bobo, and I still believe he's the best running back on that team. Devin Singletary is so very ordinary. This week, Moss shows us he has something, but still some level of concern.
I have some level of concern, too, and especially when you can't beat out Matt Breida. I don't know what's going on with Zach Moss, and what he did in college should translate to more than this, but I'm nervous right now, to say the least. But I'm not ready to loosen my bowels. And finally,
tough question.
Number 10. Appropriate level of concern, Brian, for Calvin Ridley.
It all goes to the quarterback right now. Another QB who's looking very washed. We'll talk about Matt Ryan very soon. But Ridley's still an amazing talent. Very bad defense for Atlanta. They're going to be throwing a lot. But some concern based on Matt Ryan, but nothing to do with Calvin Ridley.
Some concern for me. He's a really good player. If anyone can get him the ball on the team, that's good. However, he might have to go, like, steal it from Kyle Pitts because Kyle Pitts is so good. Have to just go run and jump in front of him and intercept it from Pitts.
You weren't here for the A-grade Kyle Pitts
obviously.
Got last week.
No, I was.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
You weren't here for the A-grade Kyle Pitts.
As he should have gotten one, but it was all Matt Ryan's fault.
Okay. It was Matt Ryan's fault. Some level of concern for the reasons you guys mentioned. Matt Ryan is not the same guy. Our first ever – the all-time record holder for most correct – tough questions is John Tuvey, who got 6 out of 5, which is pretty good. I don't think any of you guys got over 100%, did you?
I doubt it.
No. I never keep track.
No, well, maybe you should.
Mm.
San Francisco takes on Philadelphia next. Let's talk through our situation with the Niners. Jimmy Garoppolo was my take a chance on me quarterback, and I've got a B grade on him. You already heard me talk about him. Let's talk about Deebo Samuel. Last week, he played 84% of the snaps and saw 12 targets, which was 7 more than any other 49er. No other 49er receiver even played half the snaps. He leads the league in yards after catch, one season after having the league's lowest, shortest average throw distance with Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard. Now Deebo Samuel, he was at 2 yards last year for average depth of target.
Yep.
Through one game, he's at 8 yards. What a difference it makes when you get the ball to Deebo Samuel downfield. And now he's got the trigger man for that in Jimmy Garoppolo. A grade for Deebo Samuel. A grade for George Kittle, and it goes without saying, he leads all tight ends in yards after the catch right now. Obvious A grade for him as well. And sticking with the pass catchers, the whole Ayuk Sherfield thing with Mohamed Sanu, I'm laying off all these guys. None of them got enough playing time. We need to watch the situation shake out. They all split snaps last week, and they were all on the field for less than half of the game. I can't trust any of them. Jermichael Hasty needs a goal line opportunity, and he might get it. We've seen Jeff Wilson get goal line carries in the past for Kyle Shanahan, and it looks like Jermichael Hasty's that guy now, but you never know if there's going to be an opportunity to run the ball from the 1 or the 2 or the 3 yard line. So I don't want to start Jermichael Hasty here either. So now the big question is, what are you doing with Elijah Mitchell? He's 3rd in yards after contact in the NFL at 73 right now.
Yeah, you're kicking yourself for what you've bid on him. That speaks to basically anyone out there who won him on waivers.
He had almost all of his consistent success running to the left side of the field, except for his 38-yard touchdown, which was on a wide right toss. The Eagles trot out some of their strongest defensive linemen on that side of the field. Josh Sweat, Derek Barnett, Javon Hardgrave. And those guys are very good run stuffers. So this might be an uphill battle. And we know Trey Sermon's going to be active for this game because Raheem Mostert's out. So I just have the C grade on Mitchell. I think Mitchell starts this game. He did nothing to warrant him not starting this game.
Mm-hmm.
But I do expect Trey Sermon to play a part in this game as well. And so I don't think he's going to get the overwhelming majority of carries that Elijah Mitchell got last week. So just the C grade for Trey Sermon. I think we got to wait and see how this thing plays out. It's not a great matchup to begin with. A week ago, he was 4th string and deactivated. And I got fantasy analysts all over my Twitter account urging you to start Trey Sermon. I think that's because they love Trey Sermon in the preseason, and they have an emotional investment to not looking like an ass with their grades in the preseason.
Push all your chips in the middle on Jermichael Hasty. That's all I know.
We might talk about him a little later in the show.
All right, we'll find out. Let's go to the Eagles side, which was very compelling. Jalen Hurts is coming off his best ever game, a dissection of the Falcons that yielded just 4 incompletions, 3 passing touchdowns, and 62 rushing yards. Now, it was a lot of short passes, but I don't care because it was a great way to build confidence for Jalen Hurts, a 4 incompletion game. He was last year's lowest completion percent quarterback. So this new coaching staff did exactly the right thing. High percentage passes and let your playmakers run with the ball. I loved it. 49ers lost cornerback Jason Verrett, and that pushes safety Dante Johnson to cornerback and pushes rookie Thomas Ambry or street free agents Drake Kirkpatrick or Josh Norman onto the field. This is a major downgrade at cornerback for them.
What's the difference between a street free agent and a,
a regular
a non-
free
agent? On a couch free agent? Is on the couch? Like, I don't know. It's a good point.
Literal homeless free agent? They're that bad?
It's got hobo on it? Maybe that's
like they're street walking? All right.
Let's talk about the targets here for Jalen Hurts, who gets an A grade. If I didn't give his grade, it's an A grade. So I want to start with Devontae Smith. Man, did he look like a natural. Oh, he looked, you'd never know he was not a veteran. He's so smooth. I loved what I saw. And without Jason Verrett, I think his chances of having a second straight very good game are very good. And the 49ers secondary, sure, they shut down Detroit's wide receivers last week.
Who?
Name their receivers, I say to that. B grade on Devontae Smith. Jalen Reagor, only a C grade because he's got the league's shortest average target at just 1.1 yards. Which is basically he falls forward, stands up, and then they throw him the ball. Because we've established you can fall. No, wait,
it's basically a run play. Yeah.
It is basically a running play. He matches up against really each of the Niners' cornerbacks because he plays all across the field. But most commonly, he's going to see something called Domador Lenore. Which, honest to God, I didn't know that was a player in the NFL until earlier this week.
Yeah, I think you
a
made that up.
A fifth round rookie making his first ever start coming this week. C grade on Jalen Reagor. Let's talk about those tight ends. We don't know if Zach Ertz is going to play. If he were fully healthy, I would be giving Zach Ertz a B grade in this game. But if he doesn't go, that vaults Dallas Goedert up to an A grade. San Francisco just gave up 99 yards and a score to Detroit's tight ends, mostly TJ Hockenson. And with Zach Ertz iffy, I think this is a very nice opportunity for Dallas Goedert. You know, for Ertz, that's a hamstring injury. So even if he plays, he may not finish the game. People aggravate their hamstring injuries all the time. Hurts completed 12 of 13 passes to his tight ends last year. What do you think of that?
I really like it.
I do like that too. Jalen Hurts, if that game is not a mirage, Jalen Hurts is going to be a top 5, top 6 fantasy quarterback.
It was
year.
Atlanta.
It was Atlanta.
It was. We don't know. Look.
I want to believe. Trust me.
You know, you throw 4 incompletions against any NFL team, I'm pretty impressed.
Atlanta's picking first.
Speaking
next year
of Atlanta, we will talk about that team in a brutal matchup with the Buccaneers. Is there anybody you're going to start? Oh, even yeah. Calvin Ridley. We'll find out when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. All my player rankings available for free at guillotineleagues.com. We encourage you to check that out because it costs you nothing. You can also download our mobile app and get my player rankings right there if you'd like.
Oh.
Even if you don't play in a Guillotine League, you can still get my rankings off the app. And that's
true.
That's worth it just for itself. Costs you nothing. Guillotineleagues.com. We turn our attention to a group of matchups, beginning with Atlanta taking on Tampa Bay. Brian, it was a lousy showing for the Atlanta offense in the first game, and now they have a tougher matchup with Tampa Bay. What do you expect here?
Yeah, the lousiness was really Matt Ryan's fault, but I'm gonna give him a C here. Did not look good against Philly, but in his two games against the Bucs last year, 265 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. Also ran for a score in that game.
Oh, I can count on that.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen again. But then he had 356-3 in the other meeting. So Atlanta gonna be playing from behind. They're gonna be throwing a lot. This might be the last chance for Matt Ryan to save his job, even though he's getting paid for the next like 6 years or something like that. I don't know. But his receivers are going to have to do all the heavy lifting. We'll start with Calvin Ridley, I guess. Give him a B. He has scored in three of his last four games against Tampa Bay. Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb just combined for ridiculous numbers against the Bucs. So Ridley should rebound, as should his receiving mate, not running mate, receiving mate, Kyle Pitts, who also gets a B. Pitts took 23 snaps from the slot last week, 14 from the outside, just 12 in line, ran a pass route on 80% of his snaps, highest among any quote-unquote tight end in week one. B for Kyle Pitts. And just because I want to will this game into a shootout, I took Russell Gage as my take a chance on me wide receiver. But the actual tight end for the Hawks, Falcons, is Hayden Hurst, and he is on the bench, and so is running back Mike Davis, who did not get bell cow usage.
No.
His managers wanted to see last week. Atlanta was getting blown out, but that said, this is a brutal matchup. The Bucs shut down virtually every running back they saw last year, and they did the same to Dallas last week, so I got Davis on the bench.
You can't start him.
Mm-mm.
Now, speaking of wanting to bench running backs, let's go over to the Tampa Bay side.
All right. It's a good segue right there.
I honestly don't know what to tell you guys or anyone else listening right now, but I'm going to give every Bucs back a C just because they all have the potential to give you.
So you're going to be wrong on two of them.
You're going to be wrong on two of them. Again, Ronald Jones is going to be the starter.
According to Bruce Arians, and he lies, and he considers them all starters, by the way.
Yeah.
So don't even buy into that.
You really have to have no other options. If you got to start a Bucs back, you can start any one of these guys and hope for C production, but I'm not going to go to bat for any of them. It's all about the pass game for Tampa Bay, starting with Chris Godwin. He gets an A. 14 targets, led the way for the Bucs last week. Devonta Smith and Jalen Reagor both scored against Atlanta. Godwin has 8 touchdowns over his last 5 games against Atlanta, scoring in every single one. 3 in his 2 games with Brady last year. And speaking of 3 touchdowns across 2 Atlanta games with Brady, that's what Antonio Brown did last year too.
Jeez.
Including 11 catches, 138 yards, and 2 touchdowns in the most recent game. He gets an A as well. And just for fun, I'll throw in the fact that when with Pittsburgh in 2018, Antonio Brown had 6 catches, 101 yards, and 2 touchdowns against the Falcons. So very good touchdown scoring history for Brown against Atlanta. Not a good touchdown scoring history for Mike Evans, just a C for him. Only 2 touchdowns across his last 5 games against Atlanta, and both of those touchdowns came in week 17 of 2018. So Evans on a dry spell against the Falcons, just a C for him. I'll give Gronk a B, though. He appears ahead of the pecking order than Evans on the receiving depth chart. 6 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown surrendered by the Falcons to Philly's tight ends last week. Gronk looked great in week one, so giddy up. Gronk, and lastly, Tom Brady gets
an A,
unless he takes too much Botox over the weekend or something like that. I don't know.
Do you ever?
I had to take
it. He takes Botox?
Absolutely. You don't.
I don't know.
Work has been done, and now we're not talking off-season conditioning. There has been some.
You know, when Giselle goes in, do you think they BOGO that? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, why not? If Giselle's getting work done, why not get a little time?
I'm sure they have their own plastic surgeon, like, caged up in their basement for on-demand.
Charge, you live in a suburban neighborhood. Do they have Botox parties in your neighborhood?
You know,
they do in mine.
My wife and I were just talking about this. This has turned into a thing that almost entirely women do. I've never heard of any guys having a Botox party, but women are doing that now.
Tom Brady's ears are burning right now. He's like, wait, where? Minnesota? I can take my jet there.
Tennessee takes on Seattle, Matt. And for Tennessee, the opening game could not have gone worse. And this is not a layup matchup either. What do you think?
It's not a layup matchup, but I got a lot of good grades for the Titans here. The worst of them goes to Derrick Henry, who I'm only giving a B grade to. Disappointing week for Henry, where he only tallied 58 rushing yards on 3.4 yards per carry and was stuffed at the goal line twice.
Yep.
That's not
offensive
good.
Line was so bad last week.
This week he faces a Seattle team that held Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines to a very respectable 3.5 yards per carry. So I think this is going to be a shootout, though, and there's an over-under of 54 on this game. I got Julio and A.J. Brown both at A grades.
A grades?
Both are physical mismatches for Seattle's 5'8 starting corner D.J. Reed. A.J. Mm-hmm. Brown ran more of his routes from that side of the field, while Julio lined up on the left side of the field 68% of the time. So he'll get Trey Flowers, who gave up a passer rating of 106 last year. I got A grades on both of them, and I got A grade on Ryan Tannehill as well. Seattle does not deploy Chandler Jones, I have reason to believe. So I imagine Tannehill doesn't get sacked five times by him this week.
Mm-hmm.
He probably will get a little more time in the pocket. By the way, I mentioned this last week.
Yeah.
Tannehill ran in another touchdown. His seventh rushing score in his last eight games.
I know, that's nuts. With Derrick Henry on roster, right? You wouldn't think.
And Henry got stuffed twice. This is becoming a trend.
You think they have a new goal line back?
No, but Henry's a perfect decoy. Everybody gears up to stop Derrick Henry, and then Tannehill can just squeeze through. So A grade on Tannehill. He's going to get another rushing score.
That offensive line has to play way better. These grades are going to be nuts.
Yeah, it might be. Russell Wilson, I'm giving him an A grade. So is DK Metcalf. Russ is doing some early season cooking. Had an 85% adjusted completion percentage last week and an average depth of target that was 10.9, second highest in the league. The Titans just allowed Kyler Murray to go for 289 and 4, but also spent December of last year giving up three or more touchdown passes to Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, and Baker Mayfield. They're a bad secondary. The alpha wide receiver always eats against the Titans. Five of the last six of the top wide receivers they've faced have gone for at least 90 yards and a score. I'm even going to give Tyler Lockett an A grade here because he gets Titans slot cornerback Elijah Molden.
Mm-hmm.
He came in 118th place out of 128 corners in Pro Football Focus Week 1 grading. And he gets Tyler Lockett for the most part.
You got to pick your spots with Lockett, but obviously when he goes berserk like last week,
this
you're awfully glad.
Gerald Everett, he's on the bench. The Titans did not allow a tight end reception last week, but the Cardinals don't have a tight end since Dan Arnold left, so
no.
That's something. Everett only caught two passes last week, but no tight end has topped 50 yards, and only two have scored on the Titans since Week 12 of 2020. Finally, Chris Carson, I'm giving him a B grade. 19 touches last week. That was the 12th most in the league. Surprisingly, the Cards runners totaled 32 touches last week for 159 total yards. And while Carson,
they got out by the huge lead.
That's true. While Carson won't get that many, DJ Dallas and Rashad Penny only had two touches apiece.
And Penny's hurt now. He's
and
not playing.
It's Chris Carson's backfield.
Mm-hmm. Minnesota takes on Arizona. Let's talk Kirk Cousins for a minute. After seeing what Chandler Jones did to Ryan Tannehill and knowing the Vikings have a replacement left tackle, I'm worried that Kirk Cousins will need spleen replacement surgery before this game is over. And in case it comes to that, by the way, let it be known that I am not a qualified spleen donor due to my history of leprosy and oral herpes. Minnesota will need to find creative ways.
What just happened?
To get the ball. Well, because I would normally give my spleen to Kirk. Minnesota will need to find creative ways to get the ball out of Kirk's hands very quickly. And I'm envisioning a lot of quick timing routes, dump off passes, and I'm worried that they're not going to be able to strike downfield in this game.
Okay.
And that's why I've got modest B grades on Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. Similar stories really for both guys. Again, short passes could be an issue here. And they both line up all over the field and they go up against three lousy cornerbacks. You get disappointing second round pick Byron Murphy in the slot, diminutive Robert Alford, who's played one game since the 2018 season, and fourth round rookie Marco Wilson manning the as well. That put all those guys together. And there isn't a lot of talent there, but A.J. Green and Julio Jones couldn't exploit that matchup because their quarterback didn't have any time. And that could be the whole same scenario here. So just a B grade on Jefferson and Thielen. Dalvin Cook, just a B grade. If you're, you know, obviously you're starting Dalvin every week, obviously. But look what Derrick Henry did last week.
Mm-hmm.
Not much. And, you know, this was a good run defense last year. They were a good run defense last week. Arizona only allowed 100 combo yards to a running back two times last year. Fortunately, they did allow the ninth most touchdowns, and we know that Dalvin Cook's going to get the ball near the stripe, so we'll hope for a touchdown here, and that keeps him at the B grade level.
By the way, are the Titans and the Vikings the most mirror-imaged teams in the league?
So much so.
So similar.
Yes, agreed. Arizona's Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins are obvious A grades, and Hopkins has a 10 out of 10 in my grading system, and Kyler Murray has a 9.75 out of 10. So I love both guys this week.
Quibble with that 9.75.
It should be a 9.74.
It should be a 10.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the other receivers. Get this. A.J. Green played from the right side of the field on 94% of his snaps last week, and he was overwhelmingly on the field. That puts him against Vikings cornerback Bashaud Breeland, who got roasted last week, allowing 2 scores and 107 yards in his coverage. A.J. Green gets a sneaky C grade here. And I know I posted this stat midweek, and everybody's like, oh, A.J. Green's cooked. But did you see Bashaud Breeland?
Green should have scored last week. It was one of the bad throws Kyler Murray made was an end zone target to A.J. Green and better ball placement. He would have scored a touchdown. I was watching, rooting for it actively. Trust me, not like I had any money on it or anything.
No, certainly not. Christian Kirk has replaced Larry Fitzgerald in the slot, and he faces off against solid cornerback Mackenzie Alexander. Alexander has only allowed 3 touchdowns in the past 5 seasons. So we will we'll put just a C grade on Christian Kirk even after the 2-touchdown game last week. Then the running backs. Chase Edmonds, 15 touches last week, which is going to be pretty common. Enough work to start him, but not enough work for explosive output.
Ooh, thank you,
Matt. I thought he ran the ball pretty well, almost 5 yards per carry in the opener. Run defense was supposed to be better than it was last week, and it probably does get a little bit better here, but still an opportunity to start Chase Edmonds for a C grade. James Conner actually had more rushes than Edmonds last week, but a lot of that was in a blowout. And the Cardinals could have a blowout victory here too, but probably not if you believe the Vegas line of only 3.5. So I'm pretty lukewarm on Conner and just a C grade on him. Rondell Moore running from the slot almost exclusively behind Christian Kirk and fourth among wide receivers and only ran 14 routes last week. So he is on the bench. When we come back, premature speculation. 3 guys you want to pick up this week that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week, but they're already on your team. Blammo. Final segment, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Matt Harrison and Brian Johnson with you. This is a segment we call Premature Speculation. We're going to give you 3 guys to pick up this week that everybody else is going to try to pick up next week, but they're already on your team because you went into the time machine. That's what that sound was. It was a time machine.
Sure is.
Matt, who should people pick up?
Jamichael Hasty, because Shanahanigans. Everyone drafted Trey Sermon, then he made him inactive in week one because Hasty was outplaying him in practice. And then everybody picked up Elijah Mitchell to start him this week. But what player has 100% of the rushing attempts from inside the 10-yard line? That's Jamichael Hasty. He's going to have a role all year now with Raheem Mostert gone, too. So right. Pick him up.
At least until Jeff Wilson comes back, which is a long way off. Brian.
I have the Jets' Jamison Crowder, only 26% owned in Yahoo leagues all of a sudden, off the COVID list. He has a groin issue he's dealing with, but should make his debut this week. And, hey, the Jets threw the ball over 70% of the time last week. That could be that's probably going to be a trend all year long, and Crowder could be the most desirable receiver on the Jets in a week or two. So go get him now.
Chargers rookie running back Larry Roundtree played 21 snaps on offense. That is double the presumed backup, Justin Jackson. He ain't the backup. It's Larry Roundtree. And Josh Kelly got no snaps last week. None. Roundtree ran the ball 8 times. That is a lot for a first start rookie with Austin Eckler's on the team. He's big. He could end up being getting some goal line carries at some point. And here's the real key to the game we just saw with Larry Roundtree. Despite playing 1/3 of the snaps of Eckler, he had more pass blocking assignments than Eckler did, and he finished as Pro Football Focus's top ranked running back in pass blocking.
Well, that's good.
Larry Roundtree may phase out some third down work from Austin Eckler, who caught no passes last week.
Interesting.
Huh, you don't say. Larry Roundtree backing up a player who gets hurt often. Let's go back to the matchups, beginning with Dallas taking on the Chargers, Brian.
Starting with Zeke for the Cowboys, another very tough matchup for Zeke, who will probably be forced into more blocking duty again with Lyle Collins, right tackle, to miss this game in multiple weeks. Washington backs mainly Antonio Gibson, did go for 107 rushing yards on 23 carries against the Chargers. So there is some hope for Zeke. The football team also targeted their back 7 times against the Chargers, but that's why I'm going with Tony Pollard as my take a chance on me running back over to the Dallas's wide receivers, Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. Going to give them both a B, even though the return of safety Derwin James has been huge for LA. They held Washington's wideouts to 87 total scoreless yards last week, but Dak and his wide receiver weapons will be a bigger test than the football team was. Michael Gallup, if you didn't know already, is on IR, so Cedric Wilson could sneak in some production if this game goes to shootout mode.
I almost use Cedric Wilson as my premature speculation guy.
I'm going to give him an official bench grade, but he is a daily dart throw candidate for sure. And Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz, if we could combine these guys into one person,
that
would be a top 10 tight end. But they are both playing, so they are both on the bench for me this week. And lastly, Dak Prescott, going to give him an A, even though it's
even though you didn't love the receivers so much.
I think he's going to throw the ball. Well, he gets all of them, right? I don't know if Cooper and Lamb could. Dak's going to throw the ball 45, 50 times again in this game. They should probably not even attempt to run the ball in this game.
If they do that after making him throw 58 times in the opener, that's malpractice.
But we'll give it a soft A. But speaking of A's, over to the Chargers side, Keenan Allen gets an A plus. Mike Williams also gets an A. See what I did there?
Yeah. I thought you were going to give out a Fonzie, maybe.
I should have given out a Fonzie. You give out the aardvark.
Well, you get the Fonzie.
Fonzie is superior to the aardvark.
Obviously.
But anyway.
You know, we don't have
in a fight.
Why is it that I have this Fonzie?
Well,
I don't have the A Fonzie.
Wouldn't Winkler come after us legally?
No, I don't think.
A for Keenan Allen, but again, an A for Mike Williams as well. No reason not to think these two can't replicate the spanking Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown gave the Cowboys last week. Both Allen and Williams saw 10-plus targets against Washington. Jared Cook gets a B, too. Gronk scored twice against Dallas. Cook had 2 red zone receptions against Washington. Also averaged 11 yards after the catch. Love Jared Cook this week. And that's because
he's available in a lot of leagues,
yeah,
too.
He should not be, because tight end is slowly becoming a wasteland again, or quickly, I should say. And Justin Herbert gets an A. All we need is the sound bar to justify this play. There you go. Herbert. And now, Charge, you were just poo-pooing all over Austin Eckler. I'm still going to give him an A, despite not being targeted, like you said. That's a scary thing. But Eckler did have the hamstring issue.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't popped up all week so far, knock on wood. So I expect the usage to ramp up a little bit. He did have the goal line touchdown, and the Bucks did the Bucks backs did total 7 catches against Dallas last week. So I'm calling a target and at least one catch for Austin Eckler.
Really? Very bold of you.
Very bold prediction for Austin Eckler. Give him an A, though.
I hope they overcorrect and give Austin Eckler like 14 targets in this game. That would be fantastic. Detroit takes on the Green Bay Packers. Detroit's offense ultimately was pretty good in garbage time.
Yeah.
And
Jared Goff as my take a chance on my passer. TJ Hockenson is the only receiver I would start here. He gets an A, actually. Might get Waller-level targets this year. And the Packers did give up 2 scores to Juwan Johnson in the end zone last week. 5 different wide receivers had 2 catches for the Lions.
Ugh.
No one wide receiver topped 3 catches for the Lions. And then finally on the Lions side, Dan Campbell did not lie. Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift were used almost equally, Swift led the snap count total almost 2-1. Williams touched the ball on over half of his snaps last week, and Swift only led the touch count by 2. Each had 8 receptions, by the way.
How about that?
That's big.
And I think that's going to hold up.
I think it will, too. The Saints runners combined for 35 touches and 144 yards against this defense last week, and that's not outlandish for this week based on the usage of these runners as receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So I will give Swift a B grade and Williams a solid C grade in the revenge game. On the Packers side, so Jeff Okuda tore his Achilles last week, which means Davante Adams gets Pro Football Focus's number 1, number 2, or number 9 wide receiver cornerback matchup based on which corner he's going against.
Okay,
whether that's A.J. Parker, Ifeatu Melifonwu, or Armani Oruwariye.
It's a good thing you're not calling this game.
I went phonetically on that one.
All right, thank you.
Adams gets an A. I think you can roll with Marquez Valdez-Scantling with a B grade as well. MVS led all Packers in targets last week with 8. Notably, Randall Cobb had 1 target,
Amari
Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Tonyan scored in both of the meetings last year against the Lions. He gets a solid B as well. If I like all the receivers, I like Aaron Rodgers as an A grade. In his last 10 games against the Lions where he started and finished, Rodgers has thrown for multiple scores in 10 of those 10 games. A.J. Yes. Dillon was Chargers' take a chance on me runner. And Aaron Jones gets an A grade in this one. The Lions are the worst run defense in the league since the beginning of 2020. And it didn't change last week with the Niners backs totaling 151 total yards and two scores on 24 touches. That's 6.3 yards per touch opposing runners. We'll take it.
Aaron Jones is going to the whole team's bouncing back with a great game for the Green Bay Packers. The last time that Aaron Rodgers had a bad game was last year, Tampa Bay. His third worst career passer rating game was Tampa Bay last year.
Doesn't like playing in Florida.
The next week, he threw four touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City takes on Baltimore. You already know that Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are automatic A grades, and this matchup changes nothing.
They're A juicy.
So juicy. So juicy. Let's talk about some of the players that you actually have to give some consideration to, including Clyde Edwards-Helaire. If you take away CEH's two explosive games he's had in his career, one was Houston, one is Buffalo, the rest of his games, he averages 45 rushing yards and has scored three touchdowns. That sounds just like his 43-yard, 3-yard-per-carry stinker that he gave us last week. You're hoping for receptions from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and he had 70 receiving yards last year against Baltimore in their matchup, and the Ravens just allowed 87 yards to the Raiders' backs through the air.
Okay.
So he might help us out that way, and that's why I've got a C grade on Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the hopes that he does help us out from a PPR pass reception standpoint. The other wide receivers, DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman, they're on the field enough. The snap count is there.
Mm-hmm.
They should contribute something, but we've been saying this for years. They never do. So we're just going to move on. And they've never been reliable fantasy producers, and I can't expect it here. Let's go over to the Baltimore side where it's a little bit more intriguing. Let's start with Lamar Jackson. Get this. He has not reached 250 passing yards. Which is not that much, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mac Jones just hit it in his first NFL start. Jackson has not reached 250 passing yards in 19 straight games.
Jeez.
And I'm not terribly optimistic about his chances of rebounding against a far superior defense. If the Ravens could not handle Max Crosby, what happens when they face Chris Jones? And All-pro left tackle Ronnie Staley's going to miss this game. And on top of all that, Jackson's two performances against the Chiefs over the past 2 years have been abysmal, averaging 182 passing yards, one half a passing touchdown. That's it. You're going to need Lamar Jackson to rush you to relevance, and he probably will, and his wife still got a B grade on him. But everything through the air here says to expect very little from Lamar Jackson. Let's go to his receivers. Marquise Brown is going to be a game-time decision with an ankle injury. He has scored in six of his past seven games. But Kansas City's secondary is really, it's actually very good. They didn't allow a score last week. And ankle injuries are super dicey for receivers. And even if they try to play through it, a lot of times you can't cut on the ankle, and so they can't separate. And that's why I'm not crazy about Marquise Brown, and I've got a bench grade on him. I've got a C grade on Sammy Watkins, who continued his week one domination with a big game last week. And with Marquise Brown ailing and very little other talent at the wide receiver position, he becomes the de facto go-to receiver, and he'll need volume against two good cornerbacks, Charvarius Ward and Legarius Sneed. You already know Watkins is a perennial underperformer, so I can only give him a C grade here because it's not week one. Even in the revenge game. Mark Andrews, strangely quiet last week. He ran 37 pass routes, which were more routes than he ran in any game last season, but he did almost nothing with it and was hardly targeted. But a plus matchup here against the Chiefs, who are just flamed by Cleveland's tight ends for 120 yards. Kansas City should get Tyrann Mathieu back for this game, and that should help a bit, but still a B grade and a bounce-back performance for Mark Andrews. And lastly, the running back situation. Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray. If you believe John Harbaugh, this is a running back by committee and both will be used. I thought Williams looked pretty good last week, but he still got benched for Murray in the second half of the game.
Mm-hmm. Missed a key block. That was
a factor. Yep. Chiefs were bad against backs last year. They were bad last week with Chubb and Hunt just running through them. So I've got starting grades on Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray, even if it turns out they're going to split time roughly evenly. C grades. Thank you for listening to the show, everybody. If you miss any part of it, you can, and you're listening over there, check out our podcast version of Fantasy Football Weekly. Thank you, Matt, Brian, Max, our engineer. Appreciate all your help today. Good luck in week number two. Talk to you in a week, everybody. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.